It's Matt Kirchner on the Tech Ed Podcast. One of the things that is absolutely more important than anything else is making sure that we are continually upskilling our workforce. People come to us from all different backgrounds with all different skill sets. And in the world of changing technology, we need to make sure that we are preparing them for the careers of the future. Today, we're talking with Michelle Westfort, the Chief University Officer of InStride. And Michelle is doing some really interesting things along with her organization in terms of how we meet learners where they are in this whole world of lifelong learning. I'm a huge believer in the importance of lifelong learning and doing it in a way that provides creative content from recognized institutions, well-recognized institutions, and doing it for some really impressive employers. We're going to hear all about that today as we welcome to the Tech Ed Podcast, Michelle Westfort, the Chief University Officer for InStride. Michelle, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Matt.
And I know the first thing our audience is going to be thinking with a name like InStride is, what is this amazing organization? So let's just start off and tell us a little bit about InStride.
Sure thing. InStride is a tech-enabled services company. We empower corporations to sponsor education programs for their employees in a white label model. We support HR and L&D leaders, and we design world-class strategic workforce education programs that deliver the results to improve retention, expand access to education, help prevent student debt, and also help corporations skill for the future of work.
You used the term white label. That may be a term that our audience isn't necessarily familiar with. Tell us about that.
It means that it's the company's brand first. So InStride is behind the scenes. And when we think about who's the hero in putting out these corporate education workforce programs, it should be the corporation that funds and sponsors these programs.
Got it. So who founded this? You know, tell us a little bit about how things got started and then specifically what challenges the founders were trying to solve when they launched the organization.
So InStride was a strategic venture between TPG's Rise Fund and Arizona State University back in 2019. And there were three fundamental stakeholder challenges that we were founded to help solve. The first is the learner. Look, if you think about the U.S. system, it's kind of an interesting thing. We tell most 18-year-olds that are graduating high school that they should take on $100,000 in debt. But if they don't, they'll be stuck in some middle or low-end job. And then hopefully when they graduate from college, they have potentially a higher earning power and to pay off some of that debt. And so that's how it works for the learner, and that's not how it should work for the learner. And yet we still have over 40 million people in the U.S. who have some college and no degree. So clearly something is not working. And then finally, if you think about the student loan debt, it's over $1 trillion. So that was really the first challenge. The second is around the corporation. CEOs are telling us time and time again that talent is the number one issue top of mind for them. The issue is getting worse with the pace of change with technology, automation, and then, of course, hello, this new AI revolution. So companies are spending a lot of money on external L&D, somewhere to the tune of $200 billion. They spend approximately $30 billion on tuition assistance. And yet still, all of these programs exist in different places. And the market complains still that universities don't create employable graduates. And so the workforce still lacks the skills that they need. And so as we were thinking about the problem that we were solving for, it was all of those, you know, three elements. I'd say the last challenge that we were solving for when founding InStride was really around the underdeveloped market for working adults and that becoming a strong proposition for universities.
So you've got this underdeveloped market for working adults. You have challenges that employers are finding. You have challenges that learners are finding, and really coalescing around all three of those challenges and looking at how we can at least make some progress, if not solve for all of the challenges facing all three of them. Congratulations, by the way, on the partnership and the genesis with Arizona State University. We've had several leaders from that great institution join us on the Tech Ed Podcast. Would love to hear about some of your other academic partners. Who are some of the other higher educators that you're engaged with?
So I think it's important to start with the ASU concept, and then I'll sort of take you through who else we partnered with. But when we started the network concept, beginning with a highly ranked, sophisticated institution like ASU, who puts outcomes first, we thought that that was an important place to start from a strategy perspective. We also learned from ASU what worked for Starbucks, which was that Starbucks paid for their baristas to get their degree. Learn while you earn, and then you come out with no debt. That's great for everyone. For Starbucks, for instance, or any corporation, the results are really compelling. You retain workers while they get educated. You recruit workers who want to take advantage of a benefit like this. You build a talent pipeline of people that know the company and that are employable in the future. You build brand loyalty to your organization. So these are like really compelling things. And yet to really grow and scale, it couldn't just be ASU. Despite all of the amazing things that they do, we started to recognize that to deliver more for corporations, we were going to add like-minded institutions, add partnerships that, you know, make sense to the market. So we realized quickly that the second largest non-English speaking population would do well in our network. So we began to offer degrees and certificates in Spanish. We partnered with Tech Millennio in Mexico. Then we also recognized that schools have different appeals. So we partnered with City University of New York. We partnered with University of Memphis. We partnered with University of Colorado Boulder and Central State University, which is an HBCU. So we didn't want to have 14 different MBA programs, for instance. We really wanted unique programming. And then lastly, expertise with working adults. So that's really what our network looks like. But we have a number of institutions that hold that same importance of outcomes, uniqueness, and expertise with the adult working market.
And these are things that you're thinking about all the time as a chief university officer. For somebody that isn't familiar with that title, tell us a little bit about what a chief university officer does all day.
So I'm busy working on our learning solutions and services. And that includes things like career education pathways, which is a unique way to match role progress with recommended education programs. So if you think about the corporation's need to really understand what is the appropriate career progression for their individuals, where's the baseline knowledge and where should they be going? That's where I spend a lot of my time.
You know, you think about employers, you think about academic institutions, and I want to focus on the latter a little bit more deeply, Michelle. You know, we talk a lot with leaders of community colleges, technical colleges, you know, chancellors of universities, provosts of universities. You know, you look down the list of guests who have joined us, tons and tons of those types of people in those types of roles facing specific challenges. Demographics are not in favor of higher education, at least for the next 5 or 10 years. And it's going to be a really rough time when, through no fault of their own, there's just going to be fewer students demographically for them to recruit. And then you pile on top of that the fact that we are seeing changing paradigms about the value of higher education. And people, you know, look at some of the things you've already touched on, which is taking on debt, you know, tying up 4 to 6 years of your life in a post-secondary pathway. Again, nothing wrong with that for the right learner, for the right direction, but certainly some challenges facing higher education. So tell us a little bit about what's in it for your academic institutions. Why would they partner with an organization like InStride?
When we think about the challenges for institutions, they're very real, but I think it's only a matter of time that academia actually gets closer to the needs of corporations. It's certainly my hope, but it's definitely my belief. The more partnerships and more access to data and insights that can help these institutions to invest in the right places, I think is one of the critical values. And if I had to think about institutions that are partnering with InStride and others, I would really rather focus on what we know to be true, which is that more adults are actually recognizing the need to continue evolving their skills. They are going back to school. It's been a great benefit to them. And folks tend to find that they're reinventing themselves through learning, not only you know, one time during their career, but many times during their career. And that adaptability is something that when it comes to learning is not only essential, but it actually plays quite well to the human condition. We want to continue to strive to learn. And so institutions know that partnerships like InStride is a good vehicle towards that progress. And so it's just the right thing to do.
So as we're talking about the, you know, the changing landscape for adult learners, we're talking about institutions getting closer to corporations. So the learner is an employee of a corporation that's partnered with InStride. Am I understanding that correctly?
Correct.
If I'm the learner going through the InStride program, what does that feel like for me?
So we take a lot of pride in making that learner experience very simple and easy. They start by setting up a registration, and that helps them get really personalized insights and information about their program. From there, they gain access to a marketplace of academic content, which basically includes the catalog from various universities and learning providers. And then they can see their career paths. As I mentioned before, that career education path is essential for them to see, you know, if my organization has deemed these jobs as the next steps, and then what are the recommended learning options that I can take advantage of. That tends to be a really interesting thing for the corporate learner. The homepage and the learner experience and employee communication, they're all company branded, as I mentioned before. So that company branded makes the learner feel like this is my corporate leadership's intent, or like this is exactly what my corporation wants me to see.
How much flexibility does that learner have once they get into the system to kind of choose their own path, or is it a prescribed path that their employer has chosen for them? Tell me how that works.
It really depends on what the corporation's program design is. We find some corporations that want a very open, loose, allow employees to choose their own path. And we have other corporations that have created a more prescribed path, whether that's certain, you know, disciplines, or whether that's even down to the role level. So it really depends.
Is there like an example you can share with me of a, it can be a generic learner, you know, working for a corporation in a specific role that has a specific kind of pathway through the program?
Sure. I think one really great example would be in a hospital system. You might have someone who is a medical assistant that has a path to radiology tech, or a path to a nurse, or a path to nursing leadership, for instance. So they may start with, they may be a medical assistant, or they may need that education to become a medical assistant. And then from there, they may get a certification. Then they may get an associate's degree. Say in the nursing path, it might be an associate's in nursing. Then from there, they may get a registered nurse to a Bachelor of Science in Nursing. And then from there, depending on where they want to go, they may need to have additional upskilling in financial acumen, or in general leadership, or in executive management. So it really depends on what that path is. Now, that's a pretty long stretch to go from a medical assistant to an executive. But we think that to be able to show someone where their career could potentially go is valuable, even if they're not taking every one of the steps in the journey. So it allows you to see, if I'm here, I can go there. And then what are the appropriate steps to be able to do that? And what's the appropriate education in order to get me there?
Feels like it creates a stickier employee, right? So if I see that career path, if I see that opportunity, I can start at point A. You know, maybe point E or F is a little bit further down my career pathway, but I can see that that's a possibility for me, and I can see forward to that. So I could see where the platform works really, really well. So tell me about, you mentioned data before, and data-driven institutions and so on. We're seeing so much more data available to us in this day and age, and being able to track outcomes and being able to track how we're doing relative to our goals. So I'm guessing if an employer is utilizing InStride and is partnering with you, they're looking at things like retention, certainly building skills and adding value, promoting individuals throughout their organization. Do you have any data you can share on the successes there?
Yeah, so we like to use a Net Promoter Score to understand how our corporate partners, how our academic partners and how employees feel about the program itself. And we are averaging around 74, which is exceptional. If you know anything about the NPS scores, even a 30 would be fantastic, but a 74 is kind of like knocking it out of the park. So I feel really proud of those numbers.
Is that on the part of the learner, or is that the corporation, or both?
It's all three. It's academic partner, it's employee, and corporate partner.
Awesome. Thank you.
We actually do three different net promoter scores, and that's the average. We also see higher participation or adoption rates when we have those career education pathways within the platform. So I think you hit the nail on the head. When someone can see where they go, they tend to take advantage more often than those who don't see and just have an open marketplace. We do see that on average, 7% participation rates, where compared to tuition reimbursement programs, that's an average of like 1 to 2%. So you can see if corporations are, putting together a direct bill program that's highly strategic, a larger percentage of their employee base is actually taking advantage of the programs. And obviously taking advantage of the programs yields to better overall outcomes. What that means is we've seen 3x reduction in attrition rates for participating employees. So they're leaving their roles and their companies at a much lower rate than those who are not taking advantage. So obviously encouraging participation is a positive thing for all stakeholders involved. And then lastly, I would say that one of the other statistics that we would say is that after 1 year of these programs, 50% of our employers at InStride have expanded the program in some way. That's a clear indicator that it works. And so I like to cite that because I think that as we think about academic partners who are thinking about going into the space, as we think about more corporations that want to take advantage of these kind of programs, having that proof point, the 50% of employers with us are expanding is quite good.
First of all, an NPS of 74, so net promoter score of 74 as an average among your academic partners, your corporate partners, and your learners. So obviously, all three of those stakeholders are getting value out of the program. When you talk about a 3x reduction in attrition, that really it translates right into the bottom line for the corporation, right? I mean, and there's other benefits as well, but you start thinking about the cost of onboarding a new employee and recruiting a new employee and building them into your culture and all the risk of somebody new leaving the organization. If we can increase retention or reduce attrition, same way of saying, two ways of saying the same thing. Now we've got all these benefits to the corporation, and for that matter, the learner, right? Obviously, they're sticking around because they're getting value, not just out of their learning, but out of their relationship with their employer. So that's incredibly important. And then you're right, anytime we can have a client that decides to expand a relationship with a supplier, with a provider, with a partner, it's working or they wouldn't be expanding. So really three really good sets of data points about the success that you're having really with every single one of your stakeholders. And I want to focus on one of those stakeholders in general, and I guess specifically that stakeholder being the corporations that you're partnered with, and want to ask you first about your relationship with Magna. That sounds like that one particular project or relationship that's paying dividends on every side of the equation. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. Magna is a Canadian-based global auto manufacturer. And what an amazing leadership team from the top with the CEO throughout the organization. But Magna recognized the need for a world-class cohort-style program that they could put out annually to help bridge both on the job readiness side for folks to become general managers, as well as thinking about a validated custom academic content from experts from outside of Magna. And so we worked with them to develop a highly competitive operations management certificate that runs approximately 10 months in both a live, virtual, an asynchronous online, and multiple face-to-face interactive meetings. So, it's been an amazing journey to see them bring not only their internal SMEs, us bringing academic SMEs from, relevant to their particular business. And then ultimately for this particular program, for folks that didn't meet the requirements, or maybe they had a different career path besides the general manager, Magna offers their employees degree and certificate options that have a clear connection to those business needs. And so that includes things like technology advancement, challenges that they face, automation, things like supply chain. And then, of course, that's coupled with, operational excellence matters. So the program is one that not only meets the needs of their global general manager population, but also more broadly their plant workers.
So do you know offhand what part of the organization they're being recruited from? Are these people working in the plant that have an eye toward being a general manager? Is it somebody already in a role like that that wants to polish their skills? Who are the learners?
So the learners go across things like program managers, business development, supply managers, engineering managers. So when you think about a general manager of a plant location, you really do need a holistic mindset of really understanding all of the parts of that plant. And so as we thought about the cohort that was most ideal for that pipeline creation, we recognized the need to go through with HR, where are the typical source roles? And then if we expand those source roles to different populations, do we create a more well-rounded, talent pipeline? And so that was something that we worked very closely with them on and proved to be quite fruitful to really expand the source roles.
You mentioned that the students are spending, or the learners are spending, 10 months in this program. How much of their week is taken up by the learning as opposed to doing their day-to-day jobs? Are they outside of their working environment for the entire 10 months, or is it just over the course of that period of time that they're engaging with the learning?
They're working full-time, and then they're learning simultaneously. We try to keep the learning between 3 and 5 hours a week at the most, but there are cycles in which it obviously peaks. A week on site means that they're coming off their job and they're working together on those sessions. Otherwise, on the asynchronous online portions, they can be more flexible, whether that's, evenings or weekends or whatever time zone. It is a global program, so we have almost every time zone in the world accounted for in the program.
And for anybody who's worked in the types of jobs that you're talking about, whether it's program management, whether it's business development, whether it's operations management, those are the kinds of jobs that don't necessarily turn themselves off just so you can focus on something else. And so that flexibility, the asynchronous aspect of the learning, I can imagine is highly valued by the learners, by the employers. And I'm guessing, from the standpoint of encouraging completion and encouraging participation, then you don't run into that challenge of, I wasn't available at this particular time because, we had downtime on the plant floor. It gives the individual, as just one example, it gives the individual learner more flexibility. Is that the kind of feedback you're hearing from the employer?
Yes, that's exactly right. And it was important for us to take the feedback from their managers as well. And that's exactly what the manager said, is that while there are, certain cycles, we do want to make sure that folks are primarily focused on their job and secondarily focused on additional upskilling. And that makes sense, right? While they are investing, the bottom line is that they still need to perform their jobs.
So really successful program, successful implementation at Magna. I want to explore another case study that we're familiar with, and that's Piston Group, and compare and contrast a little bit your success there with what you're doing at Magna and what's working so well at Piston Group.
Sure. So Piston Group is also in the manufacturing vertical, and they wanted to offer a general upskilling program focused on social impact of continuous education. And so What we worked on with them was actually expanding their program to graduate degrees as well, because we quickly recognized that a lot of their employees were already had degrees or undergraduate degrees, but were really interested in graduate degree enrollment. So that was one of the lessons that we learned as we started to identify the population and start to work out where there could be opportunities. Additionally, we recognized with the Piston Group that they have a large Spanish-speaking population. They had plants in Mexico, for instance, and it made a lot of sense to us to expand the programming in Spanish. And obviously, as I mentioned before, we do have an academic partner right in Mexico, so that was quite fruitful for us. So as we think about these programs, you can see that the corporation really has different needs. And our ability to customize a program depending on what the corporation needs today, but also thinking about what their needs may be in the future, that's the consultative service that we bring.
So if I'm a learner and I'm pursuing it, if I understood it right, a graduate degree is what a lot of these folks are doing. So maybe they've got an undergraduate degree in a certain discipline. They want to earn a graduate degree. Do you have examples of the kind of degrees these folks are learning in part of the program?
For Piston Group, it goes, runs the gamut from general leadership. We see programming and technology. We see data analytics coming up a lot. You know, we see supply chain as an important one. We're seeing that learners actually do want to stay focused on the jobs that they do. So in the manufacturing vertical, you wouldn't be surprised with any of those degree programs. They do want to stay focused, but they also want career growth. So, you know, folks are taking advantage of the opportunity, but they're also recognizing, you know, for me to become a manager or move on to the executive level, it may require some, you know, additional time in seat.
I think we're starting to see or continuing to see the social norms or the attitudes toward lifelong learning change. You know, it's no longer that we can go through our education pathway and then reach that finish line and start our career and just kind of march forward. There's all kinds of influences that are necessitating individuals to be lifelong learners. How do you see, you know, kind of the greater world, if you will, influencing the need for lifelong learning? What are some of the trends that are taking place that make this so important?
So I think if we start off with what we know and what we've heard is, you know, World Economic Forum put out, right, 6 out of 10 workers need to acquire new skills by 2027. That's around the corner. I think that that's a reality. Rapid technological change means that not only once do folks need to change what they know across their career, but now multiple times. Throughout their career, and that's in order to just stay competitive. So I think the lifelong learning model itself is changing because it has to. And then for employers, if we think about lifelong learning, it makes sense to invest in the current workforce and keep them up to date with changing skill needs. The fact is there aren't enough people in the open labor market to even go around, but that have those necessary skills. So I think as we think about retooling people, it becomes a strong, sensical investment for corporations. So I think that those are the three ways that we see that playing out.
Interesting choice of words when you think about retooling people. And I think about all the time I spend in manufacturing and retooling equipment for new jobs, new projects, new technologies, new products. I mean, it's exactly the same thing, is that in as much as we might have a machine tool that needs to be totally revamped in order to be relevant for whatever that next generation of product is, we're doing the same thing with people. We're saying, look, your skills that you had 10 or 15 years ago might not be the same skills. In fact, probably aren't the same skills that you're going to need to be successful now and for the next 10 years. So we're retooling them with a new set of skills, even though, and especially because they're adult learners that have proven themselves in the workforce and that are adding value for their employers. And these are just more ways for them to add value, not just now, but into the future, and kind of thinking about the future. And, you know, we talked about where we've been with lifelong learning, with flexible learning and continuous learning programs. Where do you see this going, Michelle, over the course of the next decade?
part of where we're going is that there will be more access to world-class content. I think that as we think about more education and continuous learning, it will be more personalized. You know, as institutions create more content, it's going to become lower cost. There will be pressure to bring down the cost of really high quality, personalized content. And the advances that we're already seeing with AI, which I'm massively excited about, where that takes us to from a speed to creating that learning content, but really helping folks contextualize what they're learning with what they're seeing on the job. I think that's where the continuous program of evolution over the next 10 years, we're going to continue to get better. Institutions and corporations going to get a lot closer with offering the things that, you know, are needed. And then from the learner side, being able to capture in a very contextualized and personalized way exactly what they need with you know, great speed and agility. I think that that is, you know, where we're going. We'll be able to support learning in the future with things like virtual tutors, recommending with double clicks, automated responses. Like, there's going to be so much more. And yet, that said, we are still going to need humans to think about how to apply what they learn and recognizing what quality is, seeing the discrepancies and knowing what's real and what's not real. So, like, those are the things that aren't going to change in, you know, what we need to know as continuous learning evolves. But, you know, I foresee that in the coming 10 years, you know, that's really going to shape where we go. And listen, I think over the last 10 years, we probably haven't gone as fast as we did as in the last 12 months with OpenAI. So I'm excited to see where we go in the next 10 years.
Aren't we both? And I agree with you 100%. AI is going to transform education for all the reasons that you state. I mean, now we can monitor student attention, we can monitor comprehension, we can direct them toward learning styles that are more effective for them, or content that might be more interesting for them that'll produce the same learning outcome. Really excited about the next 10 years. It's amazing, to your point, how far we've come in 12 months. And then I look back over my personal career, which is, you know, 30 some odd years, and how much things have changed over that period of time. Really excited about the rate of change today and where we're going. But let's take a moment together and turn that clock back. We love asking this question of our guests here on the Tech Ed Podcast. And that is, let's assume for the moment that you could time travel and you could go back to when you were 15 years of age and about a sophomore in high school or so, and you could give your former self one piece of advice. What would that be?
Well, it's funny you asked the question, because I have two kids around this age. And so I give them this advice, because I often think that if I was 15, you know, what I would say. And honestly, it's about embracing, you know, your uniqueness with pride. I think over the years, you know, I really gained a respect for being proud of yourself. And that's something that I would share with my 15-year-old self, trusting in the journey, even when the road looks like it will twist and turn. You know, every bit of that comes with challenges, but that really shapes you into the person that you're meant to be and also become. And then I would say that when we think about uniqueness, your light shines brightest when you're true to yourself and you're honest. So I think if you can be, you know, proud of your uniqueness, you will ultimately be able to dream big. And I think lastly, I would say is never underestimate the power of being kind, because I think that that really matters.
Absolutely. All four of those incredibly important, you know, especially this whole idea of embrace your uniqueness with pride and not only that, but trust the journey that you're on. And I, you know, when I talk to young people, I give them similar advice, quite honestly, is that, look, you know, you're an individual. You're not going to be like everybody else. You don't need to be like everybody else. Recognize that you're different and be proud of how you're different. And as soon as you're comfortable with that and comfortable in your own skin, it's amazing where that journey will take you if you trust that journey. So great advice from Michelle Westforth, the Chief University Officer of InStride. Speaking of this whole idea of uniqueness, certainly a unique model and meeting unique learners where they are with a unique solution. Had a great time today learning about you and your organization, Michelle, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt.
So many unique ways to prepare the next generation of the workforce across so many different career opportunities. Had a great conversation with Michelle Westford, the Chief University Officer of InStride. I learned so much and it really fired me up about all the different options, especially as we were finishing that episode for artificial intelligence in the world of lifelong learning. It's going to be a fun ride for the next 10 years and beyond, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll have all the great resources we talked about today linked up in the show notes. You'll find those at techedpodcast.com/InStride. That's techedpodcast.com/InStride. Don't forget, every week we remind you to check us out on social media. We are on LinkedIn, we are on Instagram, we are on TikTok, we are on Facebook. Wherever you consume your social media, you will find the Tech Ed Podcast. And while you're consuming it, be sure to reach out and connect to us. We would love to be connected to you. We will see you all next week on the Tech Ed Podcast. I am your host, Matt Kirkner.